So this class was actually scheduled for last week, but there was an event that we pushed it off, so...
Yes? Last week I was out of town.
So okay.
I was happy to see the change.
So let's turn to page 2 before we start going to Hebrew. I'm Shia Guttenberg, by the way. I'm a rabbi for the JSN in San Francisco. And we did a series on business ethics in the city last year. So part of the hot topics, they asked me to come down. So I'll tell you something interesting that... when I gave this class 2 years ago, so it was a good time for me to review it now. So someone called up the office and they said they got very upset because the title of the class was "Is Stealing Wi-Fi a Crime?" So this lady called up the office and she said, she had an accent. I think she was Russian. No offense to you. She goes, I don't understand the class. So the secretary said, what's wrong? She goes, stealing wife is not allowed. So the lady said, no, it's Wi-Fi. She goes, what's Wi-Fi? She said, this class is not for you. not at all.
Starting with that.
why don't you try to find a different class that will work well? I once had a rabbi in Israel who told me, he said, something's wrong with my computer. It keeps telling me my Wi-Fi is not working. I said, something's not wrong with your computer. Right. Okay, so on page 2, mm-hmm. I have 3 scenarios that we'll try to discuss, and each of these scenarios are different, and you'll pick up the difference among them. And I have 2 assumptions on the bottom, which is basically a segue into the discussion of stealing in a digital age, and we're going to mainly focus on stealing Wi-Fi. If you want to talk about other issues. Copyright, we can do that as well. It's a whole separate class that deal with copyright issues and copying CDs and downloading movies and different things. That's a whole other topic, but we'll focus on Wi-Fi for a nice class. So
just to set the context, there are issues which I would say can be raised from a moral point of view, ethical point of view, mm-hmm. and so on. And then there's a question of what's the letter of the law.
Great.
Okay.
So we're going to do...
I don't know where we're...
We're going to do 3 of those. Okay. We're going to do, what's the American law? Okay. What's the Jewish law? And then, ethically speaking, what should we do? Hopefully, by the time we get to both the Jewish and American law, we could throw ethics out because it covers everything. That's what we're hoping. You, at the end of this, I actually brought... I didn't bring the American law that deals with it because it's like 14 pages to read through and it's very difficult. But I actually, are you a lawyer, anyone?
No.
Okay, good. Not good. But again, I actually brought some articles that are written in Time Magazine and New York Times that deal with stealing Wi-Fi that are quite fascinating. So, scenario number 1. A new neighbor moved in next door to your house 5 months ago. The day they moved in, they set up a wireless system with an open network. Like most Americans, you are short on cash and like to cancel your internet system and piggyback on your neighbor's Wi-Fi. Is this allowed?
Okay.
Now, let's read all 3 and then you'll be able to see the difference between them. 2. You are traveling through town and staying at a 5-star hotel for 3 days. Like most 5-star hotels, Wi-Fi is an extra charge. You settle into your room and your computer picks up a Wi-Fi signal. This is not a signal from the hotel.
Not the hotel.
Some other one. Signal. Can you use it?
Okay.
Now, what's the difference between 1 and 2?
I think one difference is that in 1, this person already has an internet connection.
Okay.
And
good. It's the first difference.
Well, it's kind of more permanent.
It's permanent. Exactly. Case number 1 is a permanent case, whereas case number 2 is a temporary case, which you'll see actually can make a difference. Case number 3, you order food from a coffee shop and are sitting using their Wi-Fi, which is only for customers. Next day you return, but you don't order food. The coffee shop didn't change your password. Can you still use the Wi-Fi?
Okay.
Yeah, just throw that one in. Okay, let's go to the assumptions, and then we'll start going to the Talmudic literature about this. If you see an open network on your computer, 1, blank, assume, the owner of such a network, blank, allow anyone to use it. How do you want to fill that in? If you see an open network on your computer, and there was someone who didn't password secure.
Let's say one can't assume
that the owner
of such a network intends anyone would allow anyone to.
Okay. Misha, do you agree to that? Misha works for Google, I just found out. When you see an open network, what does that mean?
Somebody doesn't know how to set it up.
So that's what I would say. Somebody doesn't know how to set it up. Right? I've actually did a little teaser with these.
Particularly if it's called Linksys.
Right, exactly.
Clues. That person's clueless.
Exactly.
Other things, but maybe they intended
right.
Something.
So I did my own little survey. I started asking people randomly who I was like talking to. Like, what do you think when you see open network? Most people tell me if someone has an open network, it means that they don't care if someone allows their usage. Now, I think they're just saying that because they want to use their open network, not because they really mean it. So then the next one you would probably say obvious. If you see a closed network on your computer, one blank assume the owner of such a network blank allow anyone to use it.
Should assume the owner wouldn't allow anyone.
Good, exactly. That's what I would say.
That's clear.
Right. So the first one we have to figure out. Now, with these three scenarios, anyone want to give a shout out? Try to give their own example? Either give their own.
So I'll start with number three.
Yeah, number three.
Which in my mind is the simplest analysis.
Okay.
Just the way you describe it. Unless it more carefully define what a customer is, it seems to me that a regular customer might buy food on one day, not necessarily the next day, and that doesn't trouble me that someone would come in to use it. Assuming they're a customer, it's regularity.
Right.
It's really funny because on my way here, I essentially experienced number three in a slightly non-digital context, which was I usually buy gasoline from Shell. So I and they have this washer stuff. So today my car had sort of the bird. Uh-huh. Put stuff in my car. So on the way here, I saw a Shell station, and I pulled in. The tank was full.
Great example.
But I pulled in to use some of their water and paper towels. Yeah. So.
And but you went to Shell.
Yes, but
it was on the street.
Yes, it was on the Shell because I usually buy Shell gas.
Right.
So this is, I think it's essentially equivalent for the sort of the case.
But if you would say it's a one-time usage, just say I work in downtown San Francisco. I usually don't go out to coffee. I go out to coffee one day and I see this Wi-Fi. Next day I go back to the store. I'm not a regular customer. I don't buy anything. I just start using their Wi-Fi. Is that allowed? So let's learn a little bit.
Okay.
And let's see what we got. So we're going to do, on page three, we're going to go through a few Judaic sources that deal with issues like this. These issues were brought in the Talmud. Now, in the Talmud, believe it or not, they did not have Wi-Fi back then. But the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that if you want to learn something about Judaism, if you search and search and search, everything is found in the Jewish sources. And the concept that we're going to deal with is something called Ze Nehene Veze Lo Chaser, which means that I benefit from something and you don't lose. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a concept that exists in the Talmud. And a concept if I borrow something without the knowledge of the person, is that allowed? So let's deal with the first one. So, source number one is from the Talmud tractate Bava Kamma, page 20a. There's the Hebrew on the right if you want to read it, and the English on the left. Some of them actually, if you plan on reading the Hebrew, sometimes on Word they switch it and they do everything backwards. So some of the sources don't make any sense in Hebrew because they're backwards. So we'll read it in English. Unless someone wants to volunteer to read, I'll go ahead. So we'll translate this. Reuven lived in Shimon's yard without Shimon's knowledge. Must he pay rent? In other words, a guy by the name of Shimon, I translated the name in here, he has an apartment, and it's, he has an apartment, and Reuven just decides he wants to live in it. So now, if the yard is not normally rented, and Reuven does not normally rent a place, Reuven has his own place, and Shimon just has his place because he inherited it, and he decided, you know, I'll just let us sit. Right? Reuven didn't benefit, and Shimon didn't lose. So Reuven is exempt. If the yard is normally rented, we're going to go to two extreme cases, and Reuven normally rents a place, Reuven benefited, and Shimon lost. So obviously, therefore, Reuven is going to have to pay money. Then you have the last case. The yard is not normally rented, and Reuven normally rents a place. Can Reuven claim you didn't lose any money? Or can Shimon say, but you benefited, you must pay me? Which is the concept of zeh nehenah v'zeh lo chaser. Someone benefited from something, and the other person didn't lose anything. Now, how does this relate to stealing Wi-Fi? If I benefit from something where someone else doesn't lose.
So the first question is sort of a technical one, is whether or not using someone else's Wi-Fi is to be considered a loss.
Okay, beautiful. Good question.
I would say yes.
So let's
at least, you know, the extreme.
Let's set up the case, okay?
So that hinges on
exactly.
Perception of whether or not it's free resource or not.
Beautiful. Let's set up the case, okay? Can I use you as an example? Okay. So you have a neighbor that has Verizon DSL. Okay, let's pick on Verizon. I have Sprint on my phone, AT&T in my house, so I'll pick on Verizon. Right, he has Verizon DSL, and he has an open network. Okay? You decide you want to tap into his network. He has an open network. Are you stealing from your neighbor if you piggyback on his Wi-Fi?
In this context?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I would have to say yes.
You would say yes. Why?
You're interfering with his full access to what he's paying for.
Okay, so
that's different. You know, it's not that there's no cost to him.
Okay, so the issue is bandwidth, I would say.
Something like that.
Okay, which means that let's just say he gets...
Set that aside, then...
I don't know the exact terminology, okay. Misha, coming out. 50 megabytes per...
Whatever.
Okay.
But if I'm downloading a video,
okay,
on his line,
okay,
he might see slowdowns of reading his email.
Good. And let's just say that it's a very small amount that he won't even notice. Then what?
Well, then the law comes in. I mean, the letter of law.
Then
comes in.
That's when the law comes in. Okay.
Okay. So if I come in. Decide to charge my battery at someone's house electricity.
You have 2 cents to his bill at the month.
Well, yeah. That is for sure adding on.
Anyway, sorry.
So that difference is he's going to have to pay more that month.
Right, exactly.
In the case of the DSL, it's $12 a month.
Most of the time, I'm allowed, you know, right. 250 megabytes per a month, and right. I can't go above that, right? Just assume something like that, right? There, you're actually charging him more.
Yeah, okay.
But right? But the concept is, how much do I charge more is actually worth something. In other words, if I piggyback on my neighbor's Wi-Fi, and let's say all I do is I check my email. That's it. It may slow him down, but he won't even notice it. Is that considered a loss? So we'll discuss that in a little bit. I'm going to throw in another problem into this big puzzle. And this is our scenario number one that we went back with. The reason why there's a major difference between scenario number one and scenario number two is scenario number one is a permanent basis. Scenario number two isn't just passing through town. So in scenario number one, not only can I possibly be stealing from my neighbor, but I could also be stealing from somewhere else, the internet company. Now, we're going to claim that Verizon doesn't need our money, but if I'm a permanent resident and I would normally pay for something and I'm getting for free because I'm stealing from someone else, by default, I am also stealing from the company.
By not subscribing.
By not subscribing.
By canceling. Right.
Exactly. By canceling and not subscribing.
You're reducing their revenue.
Exactly.
I think that's the case in one and not clear at all in two.
In two, exactly. That's a major difference.
Okay.
Yeah, you're okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. In Google, you have Wi-Fi for everyone, right?
Free Wi-Fi.
It's free Wi-Fi for anyone, right?
And all of Mountain View, right? By design.
Doesn't work too well.
Doesn't work too well, right? That's what you get. Okay, let's go a little further. Now we're going to deal with case of it's called borrowing. Shoel shalomi, shalomi das, which means if I borrow, we're in source number two, if I borrow without permission. So one says I'm considered as if I'm borrowing, it's okay. And one opinion says as if I'm a robber. So what's a good example if I borrow something without someone's permission?
Take their car from front of the house, go down to the store, leave it back.
We have to create a case where they don't lose anything. So it's taking someone's car is wear and tear.
Borrow his book that he's not reading.
Good.
I return it a week later. He wasn't planning to read it.
Okay.
Sure.
Is that allowed?
Without his knowledge?
The question is that it hinges on is, am I relying on something that if I would have had to ask the person, he would say yes. If so. We'll see later on that there's a case that the rabbis debate about when it comes to a talit and tefillin and phylacteries. Let's say you come in.
So I think this falls more, the analysis of the first one. He normally doesn't rent out his books. He wasn't using the book. You didn't take anything away from him by borrowing the book.
Right.
You didn't benefit except in reading the book. You didn't earn a living from it. So
right.
I'd say it falls under the first analysis.
Okay. Let's say you come into synagogue, right? You go into a synagogue on a Saturday morning and you forgot your talit at home, right? And you see your friend who already went to the early minyan. I don't know if they have early minyan, early service here. Let's assume they did, right? You say he's not there, okay? And his talit is sitting right there on the side. Can I go borrow his talit without his knowledge? What do you think?
That should be an honor for him.
So the talit teacher say it should be an honor, right? If he would have been here, he would have come over and given it to me,
right?
Can I assume that?
Let's
keep that as a yes. The code of Jewish.
You don't drop it in the mud.
Right, you know, as long as you're not in the dirty. I used to live in Palm Springs, California, and in the summer. It could be 115 degrees, and my talit after wearing it in the summer, it was definitely damaged. A one-time usage, right? The Talmud even discusses when it deals with the case of zen nana bezevel kosher. If I lived in someone's house, and they normally don't rent it out, but I don't benefit. So one of the questions that comes up is, but you're blackening the walls, which means you're actually making it dirty. If I borrow something without someone's permission and I return it in the exact same state that it was beforehand, you could say that it's allowed. Right? You could. But you can't say if I bring it back in a state that it's not in the same place. So when you're dealing with stealing Wi-Fi, let's just say I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I know my neighbor, he goes to sleep early, and his Wi-Fi is just sitting there. And I tap in. It's an open network. Right? And I use it. So I'm benefiting. He's not losing. I'm not destroying anything. So technically speaking, according to our logic we just set up, it should be allowed, right?
I guess so.
You agree?
That's what it looks like.
That's what it looks like. Okay. So let's go a little further. So the code of Jewish law, the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 3, whenever there's a debate in the Talmud, most of the time, the code of Jewish law comes down with a verdict and says, okay, we have to choose one side or another. So the verdict they choose here, if you borrow something without permission, you are considered a thief.
Yeah, the problem with like the approach is that it's a slippery slope.
So. Right. So exactly. No, I'm sure he really wants me to borrow his house on the beach while he's away. I'm really sure, you know? And, you know, the keys to his Ferrari are inside the house, and I'm sure he wants me to turn it on and take it for a ride, right? I mean, why wouldn't my friend want me to do that? It's a slippery slope. Okay. Now, what I brought here is a commentary known as the Ritva, who lived, as you see, from 1250 to 1330. He was part of the Rishonim, who the commentaries on the Talmud. And he's commenting on it and on a different case, but he deals with something that's very interesting. I'll read it here. And the issue that he makes of it, is there a monetary loss to the owners? Even though he is not losing out from the usage, it is possible that it will break in handling or some damage will occur to it. That's what we're saying about borrowing something without someone else's permission. For regarding an object which cannot be damaged, one cannot say that one who borrows without knowledge of the owner is a thief, for he did not do anything. Right? Did you catch that?
Okay.
And all this is based on the foundation of the Ramban, Nachmanides. So what was his little anecdote that he threw in there? The last section. Regarding an object which cannot be damaged.
Impermeable.
Right. It cannot be damaged at all.
So.
What's an example of a case where I borrow something and I don't damage it?
You couldn't damage it?
You couldn't damage it. It's impossible to damage it by me borrowing it. So a book, I would say, is possible.
To damage.
Right.
Easily.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So what's impossible to damage?
I would say Wi-Fi is a good example. If you think about it.
Well, what is the reason?
I'm not going to break his router if I tap, if I...
In the extreme, you might.
In the extreme, right?
Quite honestly.
No, but we're talking about 1250 common error, right?
Right. But let's think of a case nowadays. They're dealing with a case, and we'll see later on in the next source.
So let's give you the example.
Yeah.
The router and doing it. So let's say, in fact, I don't know, you access some site or you go over a limit. Maybe his limit is 250, whatever,
right,
gigabytes. And you go over that, and he loses his account. I mean, the company shuts him off for 30 days. I mean, the consequences can be more than just usage or
right,
fees and so on. I mean, they, in principle, could be pretty serious.
Right. So he
might really send some packets that might reboot his router.
Right. So with that example, the companies... You can't go beyond the limit. It's not, you know, it's not like cell phone usage where you could go over.
They do.
No, really?
Yeah. I think these days, if you go over, they send you a notice. If you go over the second time, they shut you off.
Oh, really?
And they don't cut you off at the limit. That's like.
I always thought that they have a limit.
Depends on the type of the account you have.
Right, and it's impossible to go over that limit.
Well, if you download too much stuff, you could get into trouble.
Right.
So.
Okay. Or take the case where you access something illegal.
That's where it comes up.
And they come into his house and arrest him because it looked like he was getting into the FBI database and really it was your teenage son upstairs with the Wi-Fi and he's getting into the FBI database.
Right.
Then it can be very serious.
Yes. A lot of the articles that I've read on this deal with... those type of issues.
Yeah.
Where not FBI, but
whatever. So when they wrote this like 800 years ago, what were they referring to? What kind of objects that cannot be damaged by handling?
So let's read the next one.
Okay.
Okay. The composer says, since we already know that the rule is according to the sages, and the sages are the one who say that he is a thief, it would appear that it is prohibited for a man to lay his friend's tefillin, or to wrap himself in his friend's tallit without his friend's knowledge. But my master says that in the case of performing a mitzvah, it is different, because people want others to perform mitzvah with their money.
The greatest gift clause.
What? Mitzvah.
That's it. It's all condoned.
Right.
Tell that to the judge.
L'shem mitzvah.
It was a mitzvah. I really didn't mean
to steal it, to borrow it. But I was sending out I was making a donation with my friend's Wi-Fi to the JSN.
Right.
And
that's a good reason.
That's a good deal. What's it, Robin Hood? Mm. That's what they would say. Mm. But the example they give here is, and a lot of actually the deeper comment sources go a little further, and they basically speak about that. But it's, you know, kind of hard to damage a person's tefillin.
So, is this saying that mitzvah is said that it's an exception as if it's a mitzvah?
It's saying that based upon the words of the Ritva, this opinion is saying that. In the case of a mitzvah, where I won't damage, it's going to be allowed also.
Okay.
All right. So now, let's pause right here. Let's go back to our scenarios, and we're gonna read a couple more sources afterwards, and then come back to the scenarios also, and see if what changes, if anything. So, number one. The new neighbor moved into your house. Okay, he set up a wireless system. You want to cancel yours and piggyback on his. Is that allowed?
No, because if the yard is normal and the Reuven normally rents a place.
Perfect. Right? That was our first source. If he normally rents a place, mm-hmm. then you can't cancel mm-hmm. and bring it in. Perfect. Number two, you're traveling through town and your 5-star hotel. But you ever notice that of the 5-star hotels?
No, the ones
that always charge you. You go to a Motel 6, they'll leave the light on and the Wi-Fi for you.
Right.
You know? Right. Anyway, so you settle into your room and there's Wi-Fi for the guy next door. Can you use it? That's our real question, right? For a permanent basis, most people would say it's not allowed, right? The coffee shop, if you're a continuous customer, you know, what happens if you go in the coffee shop, you go to the front desk and you say, can I have the Wi-Fi password? Most of the time, the girls around the counter or guys will say, yeah, sure, here, take it, especially if they know you. Case number two is the hardest one. Right? Because it's a case where I'm benefiting. Let's just assume for a moment they're not losing, even though they technically are.
So let's be too prime. Okay.
Yeah.
You pick up the Wi-Fi signal from the neighboring Motel 6, which is offering it free.
For its guests.
For its guests. So they certainly intended that people would be accessing without charge. For its guests. You're not a guest.
Right. So when there's an open network, we're just assuming that the people don't know how to set it up, right?
Well, I think that depends. If it's called Linksys, they don't know how to set it up. If it says Motel 6, free Wi-Fi, then that was intended, right? So, I can't say.
We'll see to you.
What? Okay, let's go on then. And then we'll come back again. Let's go to a Talmud Yerushalmi. There are two types of Talmud. There is the Babylonian and then the Israel one, which is called the Yerushalmi. We mostly learn the Babylonian one as opposed to the Yerushalmi. But Yerushalmi, you know, not that it's not a good thing to learn, just that's what the custom is to learn first. Then you get to Yerushalmi. So listen to this. Look what happened here. Rav Shimon ben Kahana was serviced by Rav Lezer. They passed a vineyard. Rav Shimon said, bring me a splinter from the fence so that I may use it as a toothpick. He then retracted and stated, don't bring me anything. If every individual will do this, the entire fence will be destroyed.
I buy that.
You buy that, right?
I do.
Now, what was the reason why he retracted his statement? Was it because he felt that he was stealing? Or that he felt that if everyone would do this, it would make a big impression?
That's what he says. That bothers him. He doesn't object because he shouldn't, that there's some stealing going on. He doesn't state that. He talks about the destruction of the fence.
Right.
That's been the problem.
Misha, what do you think?
So this comes back to your question about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm only using a little bit. So now, you know, take the case of the New York City apartment building.
Yeah.
And there are 75 neighbors all up at 3 o'clock in the morning, all taking, you know, a little bit of
right.
this Porsche O'Neill's Wi-Fi. What's that? That could be the case here.
I read an article. I don't know if I brought it. Well, let me see if I brought it here. Yeah, turn to page 8. You're going to love this one. This was in the New York Times. It was in the, I believe it was in New York Times, but it was an LA article. So for a while, the wireless internet connection Christine and Randy Brodier installed last year seemed perfect. They were able to sit in their sunny LA home, backyard, working on their laptops. But soon began to notice them for their high-speed internet access became slow as rush hour traffic on the 405 freeway. So what did they think? I didn't know whether to blame it on the Santa Ana winds or what. We call Mrs. Brodier, the chief executive of Socket Media, a marketing and public relations agency. The what turned out to be the neighbors would tap into their system. In other words, while they were sitting in traffic, all those, you ever drive to L.A.? You ever sit in the 405 parking lot? Right? So imagine you're sitting on the 405 parking lot, and it's stopped. So what do you do if you're in L.A.? You open up your laptop, and you see who has it open. So this couple didn't know what was going on. During traffic time, their Wi-Fi all of a sudden became very slow.
That's great.
Okay, let's get back to this. It's a great.
I think this is actually just an allegory for 405.
What did you say?
It has no relation with 405 traffic. It's just it's in a,
as slow as
slow as
they weren't actually.
Oh,
they weren't bordering.
Oh, they weren't bordering. I see that.
Your example was good.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But what happened was that people used to. Tap in.
And it happens inadvertently, right? Like my friend from Google knows I have an Android phone, and if I set it up, I can set it up, so if it finds an open network, it jumps on it. I mean, I wouldn't know that. It would just
right.
lock into the Wi-Fi.
Whatever's there is there. Exactly.
That's the picture, not a bug.
Okay. But this actually does happen in LA. I've seen it. You ever see it on the 405? That's why she brought the example, because people are just like, you know. Wait and tap in. Okay, let's go back to the last Jewish source here. The Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah is commenting on the Maimonides, the Rambam, in Hilchot Gezeirah, the laws of stealing. He says, it is a biblical prohibition to steal even the smallest amount. Right? Which means, when Hebrew we call kol shehu, you know, the example that people always like to give is like a whiteout. Right, you're running around, you need white house. What do? You take your friends, it's a drop. Is that stealing? You're not going to get prosecuted, at least in the American system for it. But according to this, you know, we try to be very careful. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, "Yimomu chavercha chavelecha kishalach," let your friend's money be as dear to you as yourself. Nevertheless, let's keep reading. Some commentators wrote that this only applies to an amount that some people are particular about. However, take a splinter from a bundle or from a fence in order to pick one's teeth is permitted since nobody minds if such a small amount is taken. And even this the Yerushalmi prohibits as a matter of piety. Which means that he says, technically speaking, I'm allowed to take something from someone if they wouldn't even notice this difference. A smallest amount. Totally, totally small.
So me taking 3 paper towels from shawl, it will be prohibited.
What do you think?
I think there should be an exception for like really small things, and that's what they say here.
Right. But this is one opinion, but the Yishalmi's opinion still has a good point. If everyone knew that you just go into the shell and take paper towels.
Take them home. Not even wipe up your windows. Just
right.
Go in, your customer, take them home to wipe your hands with, right?
Yeah. That's where the issue comes.
Okay.
No, I remember one time I was in the shell and I was buying gas and the back of my car was like filthy, and I went through like a mud puddle. So I took the thing and I was like washing it off, and the guy came out and started yelling at me. He said, "It's only for the windshield." He goes, "If you want that, you go get a car wash." I didn't know. I'm sorry. Put it back. But
where does it say that?
Where say that on the thing? You know,
right, front only.
Right. Okay. The example that happens a lot is actually restrooms on the turnpike or your driving zone, anywhere in the highway, right? What does it normally say? Sometimes it says for customers only. But if you're driving down, say, the 5 to LA, they don't have that sign because they just want you to come into the store. If you're on California Street, where they're only very particular about who comes into their store, they're going to have a sign, you know, restrooms are for customers only. Yeah? Okay. So, now, on page 6 through 11, and what I did is I brought a bunch of very interesting articles. If you want to spend a few minutes reading it. And then, I see Misha's looking, it's really interesting. I found this study on page 11. Where they found, what did they say? 4,500 wireless open networks. Just like driving around LA. Which sort of like takes away the opinion people say that if you have an open network, people will just allow everyone to come in. So if you want to read through some of these articles and we can talk about them. I think the Time article by Lev Grossman, sounds Jewish, is my favorite. Because he speaks about, and I'll say it outside and you can read in, when he lived in an apartment, he used to always tap into his neighbors until he actually decided to change it. There is an American law.
Yeah.
Yeah. A specific American law. What was it? Chapter... Was it Title 18, Chapter 1?
So the part that actually... I didn't realize that this class was focused on the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is kind of... you can see that you can... By using it, you are affecting other people.
Mm-hmm.
The question is... Like if you do a digital copy of, say, a book from your friend's computer, right? This is an example. This is a perfect example where you borrowing something, you know, does not affect, you know, his experience at all.
Right. But who does it affect?
That's the question.
Who loses out in that case?
That
maybe nobody.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the question.
For example, there certainly was an ethic, hacker ethic, in
still is
times past, and probably still true, where people would steal things like computer games for the pleasure, for the excitement, whatever, the challenge of breaking them and getting a copy. they never really used them. It was just, I have more than you have. You know, I have 20 games. Yeah, you cracked this one. No, I cracked that one. So it was bragging rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in most cases, it was literally bragging rights. People didn't play the games, and they wouldn't have bought them.
Okay.
So there's no revenue loss. I mean, I happen to believe the fact that most of the anti-program theft protection only pisses off the real customers and doesn't prevent whoever really wants to make a copy from getting a copy. And that a lot of people who break it, it's just for the heck of it, you know.
So what about Napster? Remember Napster?
Yeah.
So Napster, I don't remember the exact details, but they were sued by everyone.
Right.
Why were they sued?
Well, there are kind of, according to the laws of U.S., it was illegal to kind of copy stuff. But
correct.
I understand the U.S. laws. The interesting part for me is kind of what are the Jewish laws pertaining to that? Because if you look at the sources, like creating a digital copy is not certainly not stealing from the copies from the person who owns it.
Right, but so this, I have two concepts for you.
Okay.
First concept is that it can be stealing from the composer, the author of the book. In other words, the author of the book published something, and he puts it on ebooks. Now I'm going to steal it from my friend, and we're going to keep passing it on. So that his craftsmanship that he actually worked on, he's not getting a reward for it. And because you're using it, you're actually stealing from the person.
I think that for that to be true, then the prerequisite is if you couldn't have stolen it, he would have gotten some money.
Or if the only way to actually read it.
If that's not true, then you're not taking from him.
Right. So
it is the case that he normally rents it out, that normally gets income. But if you never intended to buy it,
right.
What's the loss?
If you look at the U.S. laws, for example,
right.
there is a cutoff point. Like the person owns the copyright for the work for like 70 years, and the reason why it's 70 years is because Mickey Mouse was created in the 30s. And if that time period was like 50 years, Mickey Mouse would be in public domain. So the Disney Corporation gives money to senators and congressmen, so each time they extend the copyright period. So that's literally how it works in the United States now. Now, and that's exactly, so this period, it's obviously, so it's essentially arbitrary from the point of view of the law.
Right.
So this is why I'm kind of very interested in the Jewish law approach to this, because it's kind of been around for...
So the next step... So there's two more steps then.
Okay.
The next step you're not going to like.
It's okay.
And I'll tell you what next step is. Next step is a concept called Dina de Machusa Dina. Which I didn't bring in here, which I probably should have, I apologize. I usually bring it in most of my business ethics classes. Dina de Machusa Dina means, Dina means law, right? Machus is the kingdom, which means the law of the land is our law. That only applies if it doesn't contradict something that we believe in. For instance, I live in San Francisco. Let's just say my wife gave birth to a baby boy, and there was a law that passed that said that you can't do circumcision. What do I do as a Jew?
Screw the law.
Right. You get a mole, and you do it, and you don't ask any questions, and just go ahead. Why? Because that law directly contradicts me as a Jew. However, there's a law in America that you have to, I gave a class on taxes, cheating on taxes. It's a law that you have to pay taxes. Now, Judaism doesn't talk about taxes to the king, you know, but this is the law. Arbitrary or not arbitrary, there's a law depending on your tax bracket. According to Jewish law, I need to follow the American law. The American law says you can't speed. Right? All these laws that exist in America, whether or not they're arbitrary or not, if they don't contradict the Jewish belief, we must abide by them. So most of the laws that deal with copyright issues, right? Before we even get into the Jewish law, if there's an American law we're living in America, we have to follow it.
So then, then the question with Wi-Fi is solved, right? Because in the second paragraph, they have the...
Right, the law. And the story, right? But I want you to also see that in the Jewish law, it's the same thing, right? Jewish law also takes into account. And Jewish law, I don't have... my memory is not picking up right now on the class on copyright issues. I gave a class, and I can send you a lot of the sources if you give me your information afterwards, that deal with actual copyright problems. Digital copyright, all the different copyrights. That it's stealing intellectual property from someone else.
So this is too far off the track.
No, go ahead.
We can discuss another time. But when you go back to Talmudic discussions, mm-hmm. I mean, the question of whether or not there is intellectual property, I mean, it's not obvious to me. There was physical property. You know, I own this copy of a book. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did I have the right to, if I created a poem in Talmudic times, did I have the right to prevent anybody else from writing that poem down or performing it on a stage and other types of intellectual property, which
right.
I think, and I certainly don't know the ancient Jewish tradition, but certainly in modern times, that's sort of French Revolution time.
Yeah.
We gave people these rights to protect their works as
right.
if they're physical objects.
Yeah, so the Talmud does speak about that. I don't know the exact place. I'll give you a positive side. The Talmud does say that if you quote something, the Mishnah says, you should quote it in the name of the person who said it. And if you do, it helps bring along upon the redemption.
And
it says, how do we know that?
It's GPL.
Right? But how do we know that's true? So the example they bring is Esther and Mordechai. They said that Esther came to Ahasuerus in the story of the Megillah, and she told the king about Bigson and Sarah. She wanted to kill the king, b'shem, in the name of Mordechai. And what ended up happening? It brought upon redemption. So the rabbi said, listen, if you tell something over in the name of someone, it's going to help bring upon redemption. In other words, you can't be stealing someone else's idea. And if you don't, if you follow it in the ethical
you
honesty...
You get a credit, it's okay.
Exactly. You get a credit somewhere else, that's the way to do it.
So I can take a book.
You know, this book is written by Rabbi Gutenberg, and I run it through the copy machine and I give you credit. You wrote this book. I just don't send you any royalties.
Right. Now, the royalty issue is a different class. I'm more than happy to talk about it. It definitely is a very interesting topic. I was supposed to give it with a lawyer in San Francisco whose expertise is on copyright issues. I do that sometimes. I have a lawyer sitting next to me, and it's really interesting because we battle back and forth on some of the ideas.
I think your example is really good because
yeah.
we were struggling before to find an example of something you could borrow and sort of guarantee that you wouldn't damage it. And actually, a digital copy is probably one of the few
right.
things that you could claim that would happen.
Let me ask you a question. Let's just say I own this book, okay? And I bought it from the store. I finished it, and you want to borrow it? Can I give it to you?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
I can give it to you. Why?
Because, well,
borrow it or give it to
me? Either one.
Give it to
me. Either I can give it to you or borrow it. Why is that for sure allowed?
So there's a specific law.
Right.
It had to be created in order to permit you to do that because the publishers and the authors actually didn't want that to happen.
Right.
And they had to write a law, which I think is called the right of first purchase, that if you purchased it, it's yours to do with as long as you dispose of it in
right.
that transaction.
In other words,
you can't keep a copy.
Exactly. When it comes to digital, the keeping the copy is the issue. Because if
backup.
You,
it's well. I mean, there are lots of.
That was Napster.
Napster. It's only a
backup.
Digital backup, right? Exactly. That's why they're no longer around. I think
I think the biggest, yeah, I mean, the law of the land, how it interferes, there are definitely, I mean, the big issue is how does the law of the land interfere with kind of Jewish ethics and Jewish law. So if we set aside like the copyright, the U.S. copyright laws,
yeah,
what's the Jewish take on intellectual property? That's kind of...
It's a whole separate class.
Okay.
It's a... Yeah, I, like I said, I don't have the sources in front of me to go through it, but I remember, and I'm gonna stop.